Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show, co-host show with you all today, where I've got my little laptop here that has a warning. My device needs to restart to install updates. I'm probably not going to do that during the show, but my computer might have other options on its mind. Anyway, we are a Main Street Radio Network production, so if your computer isn't busy restarting itself like mine sometimes does, go to mainstreetradionetwork.com, check us out, find out more information about our show, find out about the Al Nathan Show, which this week I've hosted four times. All there at mainstreetradionetwork.com, podcasts for our programs. Don't forget to check out the Android app, which I painstakingly put together. No Apple app, sorry folks, with iPhones and stuff like that, half the market or whatever out there. I am not buying a $1,000 computer just so I can compile some code. I'll leave that to you guys to figure out if you want your own bootleg Main Street Radio Network app. I am not endorsing that, by the way. I just go to our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com. Percentage of cell phone users that are iPhones. I'm just curious about that. I figured I'd Google that real quick. Oh, 57 to 59%. Of the smartphone market share in the U.S. and only 27 to 30% of all users globally, with Android dominating internationally. So, you know, Android hadn't fully taken over the U.S. markets, but it's definitely made iPhone just a product peculiar to the U.S. But anyway, isn't that interesting perspective there? And the ironically, because the iPhone is made with Chinese child slave labor, so you'd think it'd be, well, you know, maybe that's why it's not flooding the market, because the Chinese like to flood the market themselves. So how many of these other 20% of users of phones globally is actually it says globally right here, iPhone users account for 27% to 30% of all smartphone users, with Android 71 to 72%. But are these, this is just Google AI's research, but is that the legitimate iPhone users, or are they using the knockoffs that China produces? Because one of the problems with China is that you enter all these agreements with them where the Chinese government gets your patents, and then they can just go and make the stuff themselves. So you know that's why you might get a pretty solid knockoff made in China of an American product, because they have the patents, they know how to do it, they're probably doing it cheaply with terrible materials. But there might be some manufacturers out there who do an exact replica, proper materials and everything, but they use terrible labor practices, so they get a nice profit, even if it is the same style and same materials as the luxury item is. They just profit from cutting labor costs a lot. And you'd think that Democrats and other folks like that would be against that sort of thing. After all, they used to be the party that's in favor of labor, in favor of the working class. But today they're just the party of illegal immigrants. They don't really care about the working class, wages being suppressed and all that. Well, not quite true. They care in the sense that they blame billionaires for wages being suppressed, to the point where they want to set fire to the homes of the wealthy, as that arsonist for the Palisades fire last year wanted to do. Because we now know what his motives were. He was a very big Luigi Mangione fan. And remember, this arson only happened like a month or so after Luigi Mangione assassinated the CEO of UnitedHealthcare. So it inspired this terrorist to commit his act of arson and terrorism against the wealthy, because he wanted to burn down the Palisades neighborhood, make the rich pay, and then the state of California and China, mind you, happily obliged. China bought up some land, the state of California bought up some land for low-income housing in this wealthy neighborhood. A lot of conspiracy theorists are out there saying, ha ha, looks like we were right. The California government wanted to buy the land cheap, and that's why they started the fire, but not exactly. It's really just this crazy lunatic that started the fire. The California government just was very opportunist and mercenary about their handling of it. And perhaps, why blame for incompetence for what could be considered conspiratorial practice of making it so that there was no way to fight the fire, whether it's draining the reservoirs or hiring incompetent firefighters and then blaming the victims for the firefighters' inability to help them, which California's Los Angeles' DEI chief in their fire department actually did. outright said, if a firefighter is too weak to carry you out of a burning building, it's actually your fault for being in that building that caught fire. It doesn't matter if you are a resident there. It doesn't matter if you had nothing to do with starting the fire. It doesn't matter if you were just visiting a friend and neither of you had anything to do with starting the fire. It's your fault for being there. You deserve to die if a DEI hire firefighter can't actually do anything to save your life when a regular, normal firefighter could. But that's the suicidalness behind liberal thinking. What do you expect, though? We've talked about suicidal empathy all the time on this on our shows, and how the extremes that that leads liberals to. I mean, there was just the other day this judge who I've cited this before. The person who was about to be thrown into prison, who was convicted, the jury found him guilty on all charges, gave him the full sentence, and what he had done was a horrible crime, rape, assault, brutality. And the judge said, you know what, you're a black man, and we have too many black people in prison, so because you're a black man, I'm going to cut your sentence in half, because I'm sure you'll reform. And the guy threatened the judge. He said, I'm not going to reform. I'm going to get out and do this again. I'm going to do this to you. And the judge, a black woman, said, you know what, you're a black man, so I'm just going to cut your sentence in half. That's the kind of suicidal empathy we're dealing with here, where these people are directly threatened, if not lose their lives. There's been cases where people lose their lives and their relatives will say, well, they wouldn't have wanted the killer to be punished because he's black. You talk about bigotry of low expectations, as the late Alan Nathan used to say, as Al Sharpton has said in the past. I might say used to say now because he might not say it while Trump is president. Bigotry of low expectations. You know that the community can't do any better, so they're not going to. Actually, that's a case right now that I read about that's kind of like that. Chicago, in one of their more crime-infested neighborhoods, Walgreens planning to close up the last store there. And they've closed down a series of stores, but the alderman, that is like the city representative, elected official representing that district of Chicago, is saying that they need to come up with a law to make it illegal for these businesses to move out. Why does he want to do that? Because he says that, you're depriving seniors of valuable access to care. Senior lives matter. They actually said senior lives matter. I'm not sure if it was this alderman in particular or his supporters in this situation who said senior lives matter. Well, la-dee-da. If senior lives matter, why don't you do something about policing that community? Why don't you address the reason why Walgreens wants to move out? Instead, you're punishing them because they can't maintain a store there because you allow too much crime. There have been many incidents of theft and violence in the store. It's not safe to have a store there, not safe for the people operating it, let alone for the merchandise. But the government and these activists, they just don't care. They say that you have to pay the price. You are too valuable to us to leave. We're going to try and come up with a legal way to force you to stay. And we're seeing that actually happening kind of with the California's billionaire taxes or whatever, where, you know, Democrats, it's a pattern across the country. Democrats run their cities into the ground, make it impossible to live and do business there. Then they blame you. It's your fault for noticing. It's your fault for being impacted by it. The real victim is the criminal who just robbed you, raped you, beat you, murdered you. That's the real victim. You, on the other hand, are the bad guy for wanting to get out of there, for resisting if you ever resist. You know, these are the same places that don't have stand your ground laws too, so some of them anyway, and certainly they have politicians who would prefer there were no stand your ground laws. It really is just turning the cities over to the criminals and then blaming the average person for being impacted by it. And then now they want to make laws that enforce that, enshrine that into the protection of law, that when you are affected by lawlessness, well, tough luck, it's your fault, you gotta pay, you gotta be punished for it. Because you just can't expect anything more from that community. And what about these activists, too? These guys who say, it's bad that these billionaires are fleeing the state. Or, it's bad that Walgreens is leaving our community. Now what are we going to do? Well, what the hell have you been doing up to this point? You've been encouraging this. You've been allowing this criminality to happen in your community. You've been allowing this destruction to happen. You've been voting for it. But now that the consequences are upon you, you're saying, oh no, we're an innocent party, we can't be hurt, it should be illegal for anything like this to hurt us. Well, how about you try a state-run pharmacy then for that area, huh? Why don't you get some of the city funds from away from the teachers in Chicago and transport them over to create a city-ran pharmacy, since a regular one can't run in this operation. Maybe have the police run it 24-7 for you. You know, police protection 24-7. Maybe that, oh no, but Black Lives Matter, you see, so you can't have police presence in those communities. And certainly you can't punish the members of the communities, because that would be disproportionately impacting people of color, as they say, just as they say that the Walgreens withdrawal is doing from that community. So it's just really a sick cycle of leftist ideology that leads to this situation, and they punish the victims of it, and like Walgreens, the victims of it. In fact, some of them don't even see Walgreens as a victim. Oh, they're a big corporation. They have a lot of money. You're not anymore. You've taken it all, and you've brutalized their employees in the midst of all this. It's not safe to operate there, again, for the people, the workers, or the merchandise. So it's not safe to have a store there. But you're going to blame the store anyway. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
An estimated 7.4 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's, and the cost of care is expected to top $400 billion this year. A new survey from the Alzheimer's Association finds that while Americans value brain health, many don't know how to protect it. Dr. Heather Snyder, Senior Vice President of Medical and Scientific Operations for the Alzheimer's Association, explains.
Nearly 9 in 10 Americans say brain health is as important as physical health, yet only 9% say they know a lot about how to maintain it. More than two-thirds worry about their brain health or about developing Alzheimer's. And while most recognize lifestyle habits matter, few connect them to reducing dementia risk.
The survey also shows Americans want trusted guidance and direction.
73% of Americans say they're interested in programs to support brain health, and most want guidance from their doctor. That tells us people are motivated. They just need practical, science-based information to act on.
Learn how to take action at alz.org/facts.
From new tech to the shift toward electric, the 2026 New York International Auto Show is putting the spotlight on what's new in the auto industry. From the show floor, here's Sean Tucker, managing editor at Kelley Blue Book.
At this year's show, Kia is giving drivers more choice. The 2027 Kia Seltos is larger, with more room inside and a more refined interior. It also adds a hybrid, making it the only vehicle in its class with three powertrain options. On top of that, you're getting advanced safety features and a more capable all-wheel drive system.
Kia is also showing the all-electric EV3, a compact SUV with up to 320 miles of range and fast charging capability.
The EV3 hits a sweet spot, right-sized and practical with strong range, quick charging, and the kind of technology and versatility that can make the shift to electric feel a lot more manageable for drivers.
To learn more about the Seltos and the EV3, visit Kia.com. That's Kia.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe with you all today, and we are joined for this segment by Al Parada. He is creator of the Bananas Republic Substack and contributing writer, editor for the Daily Signal. He's also a former managing editor of The Stream, former vice president and creative director for All Comedy Radio, former Voice of America producer, and co-author of the counterterrorism memoir, Hostile Intent, Protecting Yourself Against Terrorism. Al Parada, I appreciate you joining us. I'm not sure if you've been on this particular show before, but always a blast having you on the Al and Nathan Show. How are you today?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, glad to have you. So we're talking now about this judge who has apologized to the attempted assassin of 2 weeks ago, Cole Allen, who tried to assassinate President Trump, and he was complaining about the conditions in his that he was imprisoned in, and his judge was very sympathetic to these complaints. But I can't help but think of the January Sixers who had brown running water, one chocolate milk. It was brown water coming out that they were supposed to drink. I mean, what's your take on this?
Well, I just can first off, I can imagine him telling John Wilkes Booth, "Oh, sorry, you missed the rest of the play, Mr. Booth." This guy's ridiculous. And the judge brought up the J6 people and ignoring the fact that the J6 prisoners who didn't try to kill presidents were a Club Med, when we know that they were actually under these horrible conditions, as you say. So it's not only disingenuous and crazy to be complimenting or apologizing to this would-be assassin, but to compare the situation to the J6 people, again, as if they were at a spa, they were treated like they were at a spa, is ridiculous. It's one of those jaw droppers, you know.
Yeah, from the complaints about that this guy was giving, it seems like he was the one who was getting the luxury treatment versus the January 6ers. Yeah. If only the January 6ers had it as bad as him.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's odd is that he's complaining about being on a suicide watch. He had run towards a bunch of Secret Service agents, gun ablazing. He could not have expected to live through that. So, of course, you're thinking this guy has a suicidal death wish at this point. And then if he proves otherwise, okay, fine. So that just seemed, again, absurd. And I don't know what this guy would be expecting.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And I'm personally aware of people in prison, not just January 6ers, but just, other crimes who have it way worse off. And the crimes aren't as bad as attempting to assassinate the president.
Yeah.
So, but this judge and his sympathies towards this guy, questions the possibility, will there be a fair trial or will this guy even get a fair punishment? Because the judge can just override whatever the jury says.
You have to ask. You have to wonder, especially, with some of these liberal judges and how defendants who do things to Republicans tend to have good things happen to them in court. They tend to escape on judgment. So you have to wonder. You have to wonder and worry. I mean, fortunately, it's on tape, so it's a little bit hard to get away from that one. And but who knows? Maybe they'll say he should get off because he fell down or something instead of being shot to death. And who knows? Who knows what this judge is going to do?
It's very unfortunate with that situation. Yeah, and let's see, magistrate judge. Should look up if a magistrate judge is elected or if they are selected by somebody, if there's some kind of oversight. Because Congress, they've been doing a really lousy job of oversight, at least with the federal judges who violate all these laws, violate all these rules, obstruct power. I mean, you had one judge when Congress made it the law that Planned Parenthood would get no more funding. This one judge decided to put an injunction against the Trump administration for obeying the law that Congress passed, but no one tried to rein in that judge.
And there you go. That's another level of the problem, is that they're not doing anything about these judges, which is why a judge can sit there and go to a would-be assassin, would-be mass murderer. Let's add that in there, too, because it's a long way from that door to where Trump would have been.
Oh, boy. renewable 8-year terms that they are voted for, the magistrate judges such as this one. So if it's the D.C. area, you know that this person is delivering on what they want.
Yeah, that and that's a dangerous thing, because you shouldn't be able to take shots towards the president and be treated. Okay, you want to keep the guy alive, you know. You don't want in the prison. You want to make sure he's protected. You want to make sure nothing bad happens, because then you get your 50 years of conspiracy theories. Just ask Lee Harvey Oswald about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to complain about jail conditions? Go ask Lee Harvey Oswald about conditions in the jail.
Well, it's this mentality of the D.C. elite that assassination is good. You know, there's this rising assassination culture. And actually, even the ones who are possibly in the path of the assassin have an issue. I'm going to prevail upon our producer, James, if he could play clip number 17. Clip 17. It's going to take about a minute. Clip 17.
There was a reporter. I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. There was a reporter in the room who was under a table. And when the shots went off and everybody's hiding, she said, "I hope they killed the orange MF." That was a journalist in the room who was hoping that when she stood up, the president of the United States would be dead. So I'm coming to a public venue where I know it might be hostile to expose myself to an honest dialogue, an open dialogue. If you ask me a question and I don't have an answer, I will get you something in writing, or we can talk on the phone. But when you have members of the press openly enticing, hoping, talking about killing the chief executive officer of this country, again, Muslim, Jew, Hindu, I don't care. That's a problem.
I'm sorry, what did she say?
I hope they killed the orange MF.
And that was Congressman Andy Ogle's old friend of the show, who was just relating his experience at the assassination. What's your take?
That is not surprising. It's frightening, but it's not at all surprising, judging from how the media has been acting over these several years, and with the assassination porn and pumping the gasoline into the all these situations, and having people like Cole Allen rationally come to the conclusion that eliminating the orange man is a rational thing for him to do. I mean, this is not a dumb guy. This is not a wacky guy who's trying to impress an actress. This is a guy who came to the logical conclusion based on what he was indoctrinated with. And who was doing the indoctrinating? People like the lady under the table.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have Elizabeth Spheres, the founding editor of Gawker, echoing your point there. Her quote was, "The point at which a sane, morally principled, award-winning teacher who is angry about school shootings picks up a gun and thinks it's the only way to make a difference is a bad place to be in. Dismissing him as a crazy person and blaming Democrats is disingenuous and dishonest." So here's the founding editor of Gawker saying the shooter was right.
And that's a scary thing. You're always going to have the crazy people. You're going to always have somebody going after a leader for stupid things, like the guy who shot, was it Garfield, because he didn't get a job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Charles Gâteau.
Okay, you're going to have the crazies, but this is different. This is calculated. This is a deliberate effort to do what could not be done at the ballot box, could not be done in the courts, couldn't have been done with trying to get Trump off the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Well, Parada, appreciate you being on the show to talk about all this. Real quick, 10 seconds left. Where can listeners find your work?
Oh, yeah, a lot of Daily Signal.
All right.
And my Substack, Bananas Republic.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. And listeners, appreciate you all tuning in. We got more Silk Road Joe Show after this break, but you can check out Al Parada's work in the meantime.
You have cancer. Those are the three words no one ever wants to hear. But according to new research from the Prevent Cancer Foundation, a different fear is keeping Americans from life-saving screenings. Foundation CEO Jody Hoyos shares more.
Our 2026 early detection survey reveals that concern about the cost of routine cancer screenings now rivals the fear of a cancer diagnosis. More than one in three adults cite costs as a top reason they're falling behind on routine screenings. When screenings are delayed, we miss the chance to prevent cancer or catch it early when it is most treatable and there are better health outcomes.
Many Americans are unaware there are laws in place that require insurance plans to cover most of these screenings.
Many routine screenings are fully covered by private insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare, meaning patients often pay nothing out of pocket. Early detection saves lives and may not cost what you think. Check what's covered and check your health.
To learn more, visit PreventCancer.org. That's PreventCancer.org.
Financial stress isn't just personal anymore. It's becoming a workplace crisis. New data shows 72% of Americans feel financial anxiety, and 40% have even missed work because of it. Jeff Howard, CEO of the Money Confidence Project.
Money Confidence Project is a nonprofit that leverages three entertainment-driven, high-engagement tools designed to help people build the skills, habits, and confidence they need to take the anxiety out of money. First, we have Million Stories, an award-winning video channel with over 250 episodes of creator-driven stories, breaking stigma and inspiring action. Then we have Groove, a personal finance app that reduces an individual's money anxiety and helps people build long-lasting financial habits. Finally, we have Venture Valley, an award-winning video game where players learn the dynamics of running a business through live tournament gameplay.
To learn more, go to moneyconfidenceproject.org. Financial stress isn't just personal anymore. It's becoming a workplace crisis. New data shows 72% of Americans feel financial anxiety, and 40% have even missed work because of it. Jeff Howard, CEO of the Money Confidence Project.
Money Confidence Project is a nonprofit that leverages three entertainment-driven, high-engagement tools designed to help people build the skills, habits, and confidence they need to take the anxiety out of money. First, we have Million Stories, an award-winning video channel with over 250 episodes of creator-driven stories, breaking stigma and inspiring action. Then we have Groove, a personal finance app that reduces an individual's money anxiety and helps people build long-lasting financial habits. Finally, we have Venture Valley, an award-winning video game where players learn the dynamics of running a business through live tournament gameplay.
To learn more, go to moneyconfidenceproject.org.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Court Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. So you want to talk about judicial activism and stuff like that, like we were discussing in the last segment. Now look at this headline, Gateway Pundit. Cory Booker admits Democrats are coming for Supreme Court if they win midterms. So let's see, what did he say this week? It was during a Tuesday appearance on MSNL's All In with Chris Hayes earlier this week, Tuesday. So he talked about reforming the court. And let's see, the The Supreme Court is another example of an area where most Americans agree, according to Booker, I guess in favor of reform and stuff like that. In addition, most Americans agree the Supreme Court justices shouldn't sit on those benches until they are so ailing. I think he's feeling a little stung by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. If you'll recall with her, she kind of hurt the Democrats a bit because she said outright she's not going to leave until her appointment or her replacement is appointed by the first female president. And because she expected Hillary Clinton to win, and she would have stepped down if Hillary Clinton won, but Hillary Clinton lost. And so because of Ginsburg's ego and her attempt to score another win for feminism or give Democrats a win too, she ended up throwing everything out. And let's see, Cory Booker, that is, he also, quoting Gateway Pundit here, he also accused the court of having eviscerated years and years and years of progress by ruling last week that states cannot gerrymander based on race. And so... let's see. And here's how he puts it, by the way. So, yes, we have to think about hard about how we're going to reform the court and bring it back into alignment. Into alignment with what? Progressive values? Left-wingism? Into alignment with judges who apologize to assassins? Judges who tell a rapist who threatens them that they believe that that person will reform and will cut their sentence in half no matter what? Or how about the judges who allow terrible things to happen in their courtrooms and allow political prosecutions to happen and throw out any evidence that the innocent side is trying to present to defend itself? No, Democrats are in favor of that. That's what they mean by alignment. They want a kangaroo court. They want someone who's going to rubber stamp them. They want the Southern Poverty Law Center of courts. They just want someone who's going to reaffirm everything they do. You know, of course, conservatives would like to have someone reaffirm everything they do, but they understand, you know, the Supreme Court's got to be the neutral party. You can't have accusations of bias. You can't have an indication of bias at that high a level. And perhaps if the executive gets out of hand or Congress gets out of hand, if someone gets out of hand, you want a conservative or a liberal, you want anyone there to recognize that and slap it down, but not the Democrats. They want activists. They want the entire judicial system to benefit them, to help them to rewrite our laws. They think the Constitution is terrible, racist, evil, made up by racist white people for racist white people. They want to throw it all out the window. That's the underlying motivation of all these people who then cloak themselves in patriotism and other such trappings to try and appeal to the average American. But no one would vote for them if they thought they would actually do something to help America, because that's not what the party is about. It's about destroying this country. It's about creating some sort of authoritarian dictatorship in its place, just another globalist economic zone where dissent is squashed, like our European allies that Democrats are complaining about Trump going against. And I just read that the EU is working out its own group of enforcement for social media and stuff like that to keep the public from telling the truth. The European Union is hard at work trying to create some censorship laws, censorship bureaus. Why are we associated with these people? My gosh. And apparently we've had now blaspheme laws enacted in Germany, I believe it is. Let me see here if I got that right, because I am doing this kind of off the cuff here. I didn't think to go into the European stuff like I did earlier this week. But I read an article that effectively they had created some sort of a strict new rule. Blasphemy is illegal under Article 166 of the German Criminal Code. Germany has introduced a strict new rule regarding respect for Islam and stuff like that. So, yep, religious hate speech is how they describe it, but it's only ever enforced one way. You know, the Muslims can say what they will about anyone, but heaven help you if you say anything about the Muslims, because that is when the full force of these laws will come into place. That is when you'll get really hurt by these folks, because these, you know, whenever they say it's about equality, it's about it going one way. But we've seen that. Look at how they're doing in this, what we were talking about in the last segment. You have an assassin, someone who attempted to assassinate the president of the United States, and this person just let the judge apologize to them. I'm sorry that we detained you in such conditions, and then pretends that the January 6ers were held in better conditions than this guy. Just outright makes up stuff But that's what these leftist judges do. Make it up from the court. Make it up from the bench. Just lie, break the law. Who cares? I'm a judge. I can do where the hell I want. And then Democrats will say, oh, look, see, they did get a fair trial. And Democrats will say, if you point out how all this evidence was thrown out by the judge, they'll say, well, that evidence should never have been presented. The judge was right to throw it out. And then they'll tell you how they're experts. They're better than you. They're smarter than you, et cetera, et cetera. And as they justify total miscarriages of justice in this country. The extremism is unparalleled amongst the left today, and it's just gotten worse. I mean, can you imagine a past era where an attempted assassin, someone who attempts to assassinate the president, left or right, would just be dismissed? Well, I don't know, maybe during Reconstruction, and maybe the year or two, and maybe right the Civil War and Reconstruction. I think those are the only times in our history where Democrats got so extreme as they are now. But that's because, again, Trump is a threat to their cheap labor, much like Republicans were a threat to their cheap labor back then, too, and they weren't too happy about it. And all this reshaping of their districts, it is a threat to their power. What Louisiana did, what the Supreme Court did for Louisiana with the race-based gerrymandering, that is an absolute, here's a Breitbart headline, Trump lobbied by cabinet members to approve amnesty. That's a terrible idea. As I was saying, Democrats rely on this the race-based districting. They rely on illegal immigrants in their communities because that means all these artificially inflated numbers. In fact, Katie Porter talked about it on the Al Nathan Show earlier this week. Katie Porter came out during their debate and said outright that the illegal immigrants are the reason California is growing. Otherwise, it's shrinking. The state is declining in population, and because people just are moving out, as I talked about in the opening segment, how Democrats want to punish you for leaving when they destroy the place. Well, counter to that is that, well, not counter to that exactly, but coinciding with that is the only way it's growing is because they're importing illegal immigrants, and that's why this Katie Porter person wants to have universal health care for illegals. Not for Americans. No, screw Americans. You don't get free health care if you live here. No, we want free health care to entice people to come in, vote in our elections, even though they legally can't. That's what they want. So they really do not care about the average citizens out there, do they? No, of course not. Why would they? Because they've gotten everything they can. They know they've got you by the hook. They know, and now that you're moving out, you know what do you matter? The future is the illegal immigrant, and some Democrats have said that in the past as well. The future are these immigrants. They're the dreamers, not the Americans who want a job, who want wage growth. No, it's these folks who are willing to work for cheap, who will pad our numbers in our districts. That is who they are pandering to. That is the future of the Democrat Party. And so it's no wonder that they got so upset that they're willing to die to protect illegal immigrants. As we have seen, Renee Good, Alex Pretty, they were willing to die to protect illegal immigrants because that's part of the Democrat political machine. You know, they weren't out there to campaign for rights or anything. No, they were there because they were trained activists, trained to disrupt ICE operations, trained to stop murderers, rapists, killers from being deported. And that's what they were there, because murderers, rapists, and killers in your community who are illegal immigrants means more power for the Democrats. Certainly, if you're a rapist, you're not going to care if you're part of a vast fraud machine. You're not going to care about right from wrong. But Democrats, they try to paint these people as all victims to try and justify why they want to keep rapists, murderers, killers in their communities. And then, of course, you know, what that does to feminism. But, Democrat women, they don't blame the migrants that they invite in that make their streets not safe anymore. Rather, they instead blame just white men. It's white men, white values, whatever. They'll find some way to blame Trump supporters, too, I'm sure. They are just absolutely bonkers about how they blame everything. Here we go. This is an article I was looking for. Congressman Representative Cohen, a quote from him that nobody can deliver with Democrats president if his district's redrawn, and that was on MS Now's Anna Cabrera Reports. Steve Cohen, Democrat from Tennessee, his exact quote about districts being redrawn in the state so that he loses the seat is, quote, "There's going to be a Democrat president in 2028. There will be nobody to deliver." So they admit that they can't just campaign, they can't beat the Republicans. No, they need gerrymandering. They need it in order to win, in order to deliver a House for the, even if they win the popular vote, somehow they won't be able to win the House as well. Interesting take. Interesting take. Anyway, we have more Silk or Joe Show coming up on the other side. Perhaps if Cohen had some legal folks voting for him instead of stacking the deck with illegal immigrants, maybe he'd do better in his elections.
Spring is here, and for many, that means lawns, gardens, and even backyard chickens. Tractor Supply Ambassador Marty Scold Jordan joins us with tips to get started on transforming your outdoor spaces into productive, rewarding environments.
We're seeing strong interest from customers getting their homes, land, animals ready for this spring season. Whether it's raising chicks for fresh eggs, putting in a garden, or wanting the perfect lawn, our customers are leaning into a more hands-on, self-reliant lifestyle. At Tractor Supply, we know life out here is about caring for what matters. Your animals, your land, your home, and the pride that comes with doing it yourself. Whether you have a small yard or a multi-acre farm, our team members are there for you with practical advice, the right tools and supplies, and a vast mower selection featuring the best brands.
For more information, go to tractorsupply.com/spring or head to your local Tractor Supply store and get everything you need for a great spring.
Building a brand is hard work, really hard work. Learning how to shape a message, scale with intention, and build a reputation can take time. A new book from a seasoned PR professional can help. In The Entrepreneur Advantage, Turning Chaos into Clarity, author Samantha Flynn draws from her nearly 2 decades of experience in public relations and uses the realities of entrepreneurship to provide strategies, systems, and mindset shifts that help companies thrive.
The core principles of PR aren't just marketing tools. They're entrepreneurial lifelines. In The Entrepreneur Advantage, I help professionals by sharing real examples, hard-learned lessons, and the behind-the-scenes moments that grow a brand. This book equips readers with perspective, structure, and insight to strengthen their voice, grow their business, and lead with clarity in an increasingly noisy world.
The Entrepreneur Advantage, Turning Chaos into Clarity, is now available. Learn more at SamanthaFlynn.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of 3 boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Appreciate y'all sticking with us through this hour of the show. And joining us for this final segment, pivoting to a totally different topic than what we've been covering, except, you know, maybe for the escaping accountability part, we have Adam Finnegan. He is a writer, graphic artist, and designer, and author of The Sleeper Agent, The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and The Great Imitator Antigens of Biological Warfare. Adam Finnegan, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, glad to have you. So Dr. Fauci, someone who is working for him, as this headline from PBS News puts it, Justice Department accuses former Fauci advisor of concealing communications related to COVID research. Former senior advisor to Dr. Anthony Fauci was indicted on federal charges. This was April 28th. Meanwhile, you have Senator Rand Paul. He's out there warning that Dr. Fauci, on May 11th, he'll get away scot-free with lying under oath about funding the gain-of-function research involving coronavirus in Wuhan. So he might get away with lying about the pandemic. Yep. And certainly with Congress, they almost never seem to hold anyone accountable for lying under oath. What do you see happening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of feeling like this might be a case where they're just burning some of the low-hanging fruit and making the lower guys take the fall. While people like Anthony Fauci get off scot-free. I hope that's not the case, but that's kind of what it's looking like.
Yeah, unfortunately, as much as we've been hoping that there'd be accountability with Trump's DOJ, and we forget that all we did was really change the window dressing, the DOJ is still operated by many of the same folks' faces that have been there for many, many years, and they have no reason to drag a fellow bureaucrat like Fauci, who outlasted many administrations, through the mud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been going on a long time. It's a rot that goes back many decades.
And so because of that, though, the solution isn't just as short term as making sure the right person gets elected. That's helpful, but you know, really just it seems to be that we need a bit more of a cleaning out in the Department of Justice, and certainly the healthcare fields too of the government, because how many of these people that are still there, the CDC and other groups that were just Fauci acolytes who never left?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a really big red flag. Some of the people that we had at the FDA, I talked about in my book, there was a guy named M.P. Chumakov, whose son was running vaccine safety and review at the FDA. And it was just, when you see who that guy was, it's a huge red flag. So it's something that is definitely a very disturbing set of circumstances. And you're right, like it needs to be cleaned out from, you know, top to bottom.
I guess you could put it as it's sort of an illness of the American people that, you know, regardless of which party you're in, a lot of us think, oh, we'll just vote, and then we voted once, so, and our guy won.
Yeah.
So we're good to go. We don't need to come out and do anything anymore. We don't need to follow up anymore. We can just, you know, vote and wait for the accountability, or vote for and wait for whatever we want to just come rolling in.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, next guy's going to come in and change every 4 years, right? I mean, everybody gets all amped up for the next president. They get elected and they make all these promises. What happens? And then, well, one everything. President can't. Well, we need something to happen. We need to change something. The way things are going is just not sustainable.
Well, Adam Finnegan, I want to ask our producer to call you back real quick, because you were breaking up severely during that statement. And listeners, I'll just remind you that we're talking with Adam Finnegan, who's a writer, graphic artist, and designer, and author of The Sleeper Agent, The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and The Great Imitator Antigens of Biological Warfare. And if for some reason you're just tuning in the last 5 minutes, maybe because the next show on CRN Talk is about to start, one of the folks who airs us, we're talking in this article now about this article from The Hill, Rand Paul pushes for Fauci indictment before statute of limitations expires. And also talking about how another one of Fauci's folks has been indicted. So Adam Finnegan, as we were saying, it's just a symptom that we're going to, as American voters, we're going to think, oh, we'll just wait for the next president. But the bureaucracy knows that. The folks like Fauci, again, who've outlasted administrations, they know that they can just wait 4 years and then they'll be good to go.
Right. I mean, I think the more people know about everything, the more people know about the rot that's been going back decades, I think we'll be in a better position. But I don't think it's enough to just vote people in. I think it's people have to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in your book, The Sleeper Agent, The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and the Great Imitator Antigens of Biological Warfare, do you get into any of this in that book?
Yeah, I mean, this goes back from a very early time. I mean, this goes back to the beginning of the United States when the British were using smallpox against the United States, and it goes through World War II. It goes into the 60s, 70s, and up to the present day. I mean, I didn't really cover a lot of stuff in the present day, but there's so much that was important at the time that I did cover that it's very relevant today. It's very relevant today.
Yeah, and I guess the question people should ask, much like they should be asking with voter fraud, is if it's happened in the past, why do we think it's stopped right now? And, you know, part two of that question is how many of some of these minds in government right now were still in the government or had relatives or knew someone in the government at the time some of this stuff was happening? Because we're talking just the 20th century with some of these things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always gone with the assumption that if a mess is left and not cleaned up, it only turns into a bigger mess. And that's exactly what we've had here, is a mess that's just been left to fester over the decades and just getting, you know, it's just absolutely boiling over right now.
Yeah, and to much the detriment of us. And I don't know if it's a testament that technology and biotech has gotten to the point where so many people can be affected by this mess as opposed to earlier where it was much easier to conceal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I basically broke down in that book, how the game of biowarfare is played and how biodefense is intertwined into public health. And I think people will learn a lot from reading that book. And you can find that book at thesleeperagent.com.
All right. Well, Adam Finnegan, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show to talk about this. Listeners, something for you to check out because we are done with you for this weekend. But if you want to check out our website, it is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.